I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. As India battles a devastating wave of COVID-19 infections, over the weekend, Prime Minister Modi once again made a plea for global vaccine solidarity, asking countries to sign on to a vaccine patent waiver. This call has been echoed by the World Health Organization.
This is in the interest of each and every country in the world.
The Pope.
Oggi in questo tempo di oscurità e incertezze per la pandemia.
And many other developing nations who believe that this idea, first proposed in late 2020, could significantly alter the fight against COVID-19. Today, the laws preventing developing countries from accessing COVID-19 vaccines. It's Tuesday, the 11th of May. So, Elias, you've been doing quite a bit of reporting on intellectual property and vaccines. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so if you cast your mind back to late last year when countries around the world started doing deals with pharmaceutical companies for vaccines, that's when this issue really started to gain prominence.
Elias Fazzonte is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
A lot of wealthier nations, Australia included, were announcing big deals they'd signed with vaccine manufacturers. You might remember Australia announced a deal with AstraZeneca and Pfizer, and we also had a locally developed vaccine in the bag. I mean, Australia was announcing vaccine deals in September. The UK and US were doing this before then. Part of the problem for poorer countries like India was that while these richer countries were signing deals with multiple vaccine manufacturers to hedge their bets if some of the formulas didn't work, poorer countries couldn't really afford to do this. So they weren't just hindered by price, but they kind of had to wait to see which vaccines passed approvals. And the irony is, India, a developing country, was set up to be, one of the world's biggest manufacturing centres for these vaccines. Except the bulk of the vaccines they've been making have been going to richer countries in places like Europe that could pay more to get in earlier.
So we have this system where wealthy countries got the pick of the vaccine deals, and less wealthy countries manufacture them and send them overseas. That does seem a little flawed.
Yeah, and so those flaws were pretty clear to some. So India, along with South Africa, came up with this idea that instead of making these vaccines for the big pharmaceutical companies that were then getting mostly distributed elsewhere, what if they could use the vaccine formulas that these companies were making to make their own vaccines?
So kind of make like an off-brand Pfizer vaccine.
Yeah, kind of like how you get a generic script at the pharmacy and it's cheaper. The big problem with that is, of course, that these vaccines are patented. They're protected by copyright law that prohibits this sort of thing. And internationally, that's overseen by the World Trade Organization. And there's this agreement between all member nations of the WTO. It's called the Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights Group, which we'll call TRIPS for short. And a key part of the TRIPS agreement basically requires member nations to provide patent protection for at least 20 years on things like medicines.
And vaccines.
Yeah. So the intellectual property on medicines is a big part of what TRIPS deals with. There's a TRIPS meeting every few months, and it's met a handful of times since October. So in October, the Indian government, together with South Africa, submit a proposal to the WTO to suspend COVID vaccine patents for the duration of the pandemic in what's referred to as a vaccine waiver.
So their idea is, let us use your special vaccine formulas just for the duration of this crisis, and then we'll go back to following the usual TRIPS rules and regulations.
Yeah, so sounds sensible enough. But the process of getting this approved has been far from straightforward.
How so?
At the WTO, there's a consensus-based voting system, not a majority-based voting system. So everyone has to agree on this. And there are about 160 member nations in the WTO. And in the lead up to the TRIPS meetings, we see this campaign beginning to build against the proposal. So pharmaceutical companies are obviously signing all these deals, and they've invested a lot in COVID vaccines, and, they stand to make money from that. And so naturally, they're opposed to losing some of those protections. And you start to see industry lobby groups in countries like the US, in Switzerland, arguing that this is going to cut their companies' returns and that it's going to be essentially a disincentive to innovate for medicines in the future.
Mm. So basically, if you do this, our companies won't make as much money off this vaccine and we might not even invest in a vaccine in the future, is the argument from these pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, that's kind of the argument they're trying to make. And what happens is we start to see this split forming between WTO members. So a lot of momentum builds behind this waiver proposal, especially among low and middle income countries. While a handful of governments in the US, the UK and Europe, you know, home to those pharmaceutical companies, as well as other rich countries, including Australia, aren't supporting it. So in March this year, seeing the kind of deadlock that there is, the Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros, writes a piece in The Guardian, actually, and he points out that of the 225 million vaccine doses that have been administered so far, the vast majority have been in a handful of rich and vaccine-producing countries, while most low- and middle-income countries are watching and waiting. He says that a me-first approach might serve short-term political interests, but it is self-defeating and will lead to protracted recovery, with trade and travel continuing to suffer. And he throws his support behind the vaccine waiver, saying we really just need to pull out all the stops because we're on a war footing.
So Dr. Tedros is encouraging countries to come together and distribute the vaccine for the common good.
Yeah. And so then the member nations meet in March. The meeting actually marked the anniversary of the pandemic's declaration. So it was a symbolic time and the proposal is discussed. And, you know, more than 100 countries, again, mostly lower and middle income nations, are supporting it. But the proposal was ultimately brought down by the UK, Switzerland, EU nations, the US, and in a way, Australia.
What do you mean? What did Australia do at this TRIPS meeting?
So Australia's position is not straightforward on this. Trade Minister Dan Tehan was asked about the waiver right before the TRIPS meeting in March. You know, he was asked if we'd support it, and his answer was,
obviously, we've got to make sure that there are some protections in place for the millions of dollars that has gone into the research to create these vaccines.
So they didn't vote for the waiver, but they also didn't block it to the extent that the US and some of those other rich countries did. Essentially, Australia was part of a last-minute attempt, along with some of the other countries that are maybe sitting on the fence on this one, like New Zealand and Canada. And essentially, they put out a communication which urged the WTO to help individual countries negotiate with pharmaceutical companies.
What do you mean? How would that proposal work?
So instead of just a carte blanche providing these vaccine formulas to countries to reproduce for free, Australia's kind of middle ground position would require poorer countries and those manufacturing the generic vaccines to individually negotiate with pharmaceutical companies one by one for the rights to the formulas and, importantly, still pay for them. Now, as you can imagine, this would take some time to figure out, with the possibility that each country would have to go to each company to sort out a deal, and this would still cost money, which is obviously a big issue in places like India, where the situation is quite urgent.
So how was this proposal received at the meeting?
It's hard to say for sure. We weren't privy to all the back and forth that happened. But it's clear that Australia's proposal didn't really address some of the key concerns with how these vaccine deals are being made, and it didn't bring everyone together. And ultimately, at the end of this meeting, no agreement was made, and Australia was seen by many as one of these richer nations seen standing in the way of cheaper access to vaccines for developing nations.
Okay, so was that the end of a plan for this waiver after they didn't reach a consensus in this March TRIPS meeting?
No, so the waiver still gets proposed at each time TRIPS meets. And so last week, there was another TRIPS meeting. And so it's not exactly clear what came out of that. We know a proposal wasn't agreed to. But India and South Africa, who'd been leading this push, they said that they'd go away and slightly tweak their proposal. And I guess that was a bit of a sign. And a few days later, the United States, in what surprised a lot of people, reversed its long-held opposition to announce that they'd actually back this waiver plan. The US Trade Representative, Katherine Tai, announced the updated position, saying essentially, these extraordinary times and circumstances call for extraordinary measures. And the Biden administration believes strongly in intellectual property protections, but in service of ending this pandemic, supports the waiver for those protections for COVID-19 vaccines.
Elias, this is a huge shift. How was this announcement received?
Very differently from different people. So the World Health Organization Director General, Dr. Tedros, he called the US's support, you know, a monumental moment in the fight against COVID-19.
Wednesday's announcement by the United States of America that it will support a temporary waiver of intellectual property protections for COVID-19 vaccines is a significant statement of solidarity and support for vaccine equity. I know that this is not a politically easy thing to do, so I very much appreciate the leadership of the United States, and we urge other countries to follow their example.
You know, right after that, we saw New Zealand indicate that they'd change their position. The Pope came out in support of the idea. On the other hand, it was a different story for pharmaceutical companies. A few key lobby groups said that they thought this was a bad step and that it would harm what they do. Some of the vaccine manufacturers based in the US, you know, like Moderna and Pfizer, their share prices plunged.
So that's kind of the worst nightmare of these pharmaceutical companies, right? That's what they warned about.
Look, they do still have billions of dollars of COVID vaccine deals in the pipeline. So some people are taking their outrage with a grain of salt. Most significantly, over the weekend, a series of European leaders, including those who had previously appeared open to the waiver idea, said this was not a priority and expressed frustration at the US's attempt to claim the moral high ground. So a mixed reaction overall.
Next, the role that Australia could play in combating COVID-19 vaccine inequality. Okay, so the US supports it, and their support has led other countries to come on board. What about Australia? Has this changed their position on the vaccine waiver at all?
Well, it's kind of unclear at the moment. In the hours after the US updated its position, Dan Tehan welcomed the news. He called it a positive development. But he said that, you know, Australia looks forward to working with the US to find solutions. He didn't back that up with a commitment to support the waiver proposal. And then Scott Morrison, when he was asked about this at a press conference on Thursday, his comments were confusing, if not incoherent.
What do you mean? What did he say?
Well, he was asked about a waiver. He called it a terrific development.
It's great news. It's tremendous news.
But kind of then went on to talk about local vaccine production.
And where you've heard what the New South Wales government has said about mRNA vaccines. You've heard what we've said about it. It was last night I was on one of my regular calls with many of the European leaders, as well as from Israel and New Zealand and a few others. And we regularly discuss these issues and setting up our own manufacturing capabilities. As you know, here in Melbourne, we've done that with the AstraZeneca vaccine already, which is a very good vaccine. And I would encourage Australians over 50s now, you can go and you can get that vaccine. Jenny had hers yesterday.
And important didn't kind of acknowledge Australia's position on it, or that, you know, this is a proposal mainly to help more developing nations.
But Elias, as you've explained, the way that this proposal will get through is by consensus, that is all countries supporting this waiver. Does that mean that the pressure is now on to get Australia to change its position?
There's certainly pressure on Australia now. Amnesty International, when they were reacting to the US's position change, singled out Australia as well as the UK, the EU and Brazil, encouraging them to follow the US's lead. And back home, Labor and the Greens are pushing for change. Labor's trade spokeswoman, Madeleine King, said rather than obstruct the waiver, the Morrison government needs to do more work on this to get the waiver implemented than oppose it.
So if this proposal gets through and developing countries are able to access these cheaper vaccines, will this shorten this pandemic around the world?
It could still take months. Experts believe it'll be an important step towards increasing the scale and speed of the world's vaccine rollout. But yeah, it's not going to be that instant fix for developing nations.
Mm.
And as many EU nations were saying over the weekend, there are a lot of issues with manufacturing and exporting that would hold up the vaccine. And they say that these issues are kind of more important than focusing on the waiver.
Mm, like what?
Well, currently the US and the UK prioritise their own domestic production of the vaccine, which really holds up exporting doses, and also exporting key ingredients elsewhere. Plus, there's this argument that manufacturing is already at capacity around the world, which is debatable because many are arguing that this waiver would spur on new manufacturing industries in some countries.
Mm, I mean, these sound like further hurdles for sure, but to me it doesn't necessarily invalidate the idea of the waiver overall that there are also issues in manufacturing. Surely all of these issues just need to be solved.
Look, that's what a lot of people are saying. And in the meantime, we just see more and more delays. I spoke to one of the supporters of the proposal here in Australia. Her name is Patricia Reynolds, and she's the convener of the Australian Fair Trade and Investment Network. And she said that had this proposal been accepted when it was first proposed last October, well, India's path out of its current outbreak might have been a little different.
What kind of effect could this have if this waiver is not agreed to? What could we see in the coming months and years?
Well, I think not a lot would change with how vaccines are currently being distributed, and some people think that's a big problem. You know, more than 85 poor countries are not predicted to achieve widespread vaccination rollout before 2023, if at all, because of licensing rules and distribution limits.
Mm, so we could be looking at years of outbreaks in countries that have the least wealth and the least capacity to deal with them.
Yeah. And so basically, you know, what we're seeing now in India, this could mean drastically more cases, more deaths, and ultimately, the longer the virus circulates and mutates in a country, we could see new variants pop up that could ultimately hamper how effective the vaccines are and the position of those richer countries that have vaccinated people.
Mm, so it could threaten even developed countries with a good vaccination program.
Yeah, and I think this is a key argument of a lot of those experts and human rights groups who've been calling for this waiver. Medicines Sans Frontières, Amnesty International, as well as the WHO, have all warned about the risk of COVID circulating longer in those countries and that vaccination has to be a global effort.
Thanks to Elias for his time. You can read his reporting on vaccine patents at theguardian.com. Plus, we put some links to the latest on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by myself, Karishma Luthria, Miles Herbert, Ellen Leibeater, and Ryan Pemberton. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.